Today we are going to study, I think, one of the most important texts in our Bible. And I want to begin by telling you about a man that I'd heard that was on his deathbed. He knew he was close to death. He knew that it was imminent. So he requested that his doctor and his lawyer come to see him and sit one on either side of his bed. So they came to be with him those final hours. They sat there. And the man on the bed never said a word. And finally, the doctor leaned forward and said, "Well, we're here. Was there a reason that you wanted us to be on either side of your bed?" The man looked up weakly and he said, "Yes. Jesus died between two thieves and I wanted to go as much like him as I possibly could." Let me ask you a question. How would your thoughts turn if you knew that death was imminent? What would be the philosophy of living and dying that you would try to pass on to your loved ones if you knew you only had a little bit of time and just maybe a few words to communicate? That is Paul's situation. He's in a Roman prison. He doesn't know if he's going to live or if he's going to die. He faces the possibility of imminent death. And what he does in just a few short words is articulate, I believe, one of the most profound and significant philosophies ever uttered in one sentence. Just 12 words. He sums up everything that we need to know about living and dying. Philippians 1:21, "For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." Nowhere in this epistle will you find Paul engaged in that poor, pitiful Paul kind of thinking. As far as Paul is concerned, he was in a no-lose situation. If I live, I live for Christ. If I die, I'm with Christ. And that is gain. That's a win-win. It is kind of like taking your pet to a veterinarian who's also a taxidermist. Either way, you get your cat back. Paul says, it doesn't matter what happens. I'm going to be okay. He is so obsessed with Christ that he can't imagine any future circumstance that is not going to be okay for him. Because to Paul, Christ is a matter of life and death. And what about you? Let me just begin by asking you this question. Do you summarize life and death in terms of Christ? Most people don't. Most people live by a brief but different philosophy of life and death. Not to say that most people aren't religious or that most people don't even go to church or don't visit church, but most people live by this particular philosophy. To live is me, and to die is tragic. And that sums up most people's view of living and dying. But me is a very small reason for living. And it leads to a very empty kind of life. And I think it explains why there's so much despair and so much depression and so much fear in our world. Because in my judgment, most people have two great fears that really dominate their thinking. They are afraid, first, that they might die tonight. And they're also fearful, second, that they might have to live tomorrow. Dying frightens them, and living, there's no passion. But there is this strange group of people like Paul, and I call them strange because They have this passion for living, and they have a passion for dying. In fact, if you were to ask them if they would rather live or die, they wouldn't be sure which one to choose. So they're eager to both live and they're eager to die. And what I want to do today is share with you the philosophy of living and dying from those kind of people. So listen as Paul communicates in Philippians 1. We'll start again with verse 21. Read it from your own Bible. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I'm going to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I don't know. I'm torn between the two. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far. But it's more necessary for you that I remain in the body. Convinced of this, I know that I'll remain. And I'll continue with all of you for your progress and joy in the faith, so that through my being with you again, your joy in Christ will overflow on account of me. And in those very few words, Paul, I think, has summed up the philosophy of living and dying that will absolutely change your life. So let's talk about the first part of that. Let's talk about living, because what Paul just said is that Christ provides the purpose and joy for living. Most people don't have much reason for living. A lot of people work so hard for that degree or that house or that place to retire to, and you look up and you think, for what? I spent my whole life for this? Why don't I feel any better? The problem with most is not that they don't have enough to live on, it's that they don't have enough to live for. And you know what's sad? It's sad that after 40 or 50 or 60 or more years on this planet that you could look back and you could think, it really doesn't matter what I've done. My life really doesn't matter. And then 10 years after they put you into the ground, what little teeny contribution that you have given is completely forgotten. The brilliant physicist Robert Oppenheimer said just 1 year before he died, I am a complete failure. The scholar from Princeton University who headed up the Los Alamos project that produced the atomic bomb was reminded then of all of the incredible achievements that he had done in his life and all of the brilliant study that he had. And he said, yeah, but it leaves on the tongue just a taste of ashes. What a sad thing to live a life 40, 50, 60 or more years and say, is this all that there is? Not Paul. Paul had a passion for living. Paul said, if I'm going to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. In short, Paul is saying, I'm not afraid to live because I know if I live, my life is going to matter. I know if I live, my life is going to make a difference. My life is going to be fruitful. And if you read verses 24 through 26 in chapter 1, you'll find that five times Paul mentions you. If I keep on living, he says, it's going to matter to you. Paul loved living because living meant bringing the joy of Jesus into the lives of other people. Do you know why there's despair and depression today? There is so much depression today because there's so much preoccupation with self today. Why did God leave you here on this planet? Why are you here today? Why didn't God take you home? Why do you got one more day to live here? Let me tell you what Satan is trying to tell you. Satan is trying to convince you that the reason that you're still here, the reason that you're still alive, is because you're not actually saved yet. And you need to work a little bit harder today. You need to try to earn that salvation before you actually kick the bucket. And that is a miserable way to live. When Jesus Christ died on the cross, he said those words, "It is finished." And if you are united with Christ, there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. And everything that is necessary for your salvation to be completed has already been done. Your salvation, it is a settled issue. So why are you here? Not to finish your salvation. You are still here because God knows somebody needs you. That's why you're here. God does not let you live one more day without somebody else needing you. In other words, life in these bodies is actually only going to be joyful when I'm looking not only to my own interests, but to the interest of other people. You know what George Whitefield, that great British evangelist, used to pray? He used to pray these words, God, give me souls, or take me home. Give me people I can bless with Jesus, or take me on home to see him. Our past governor, Terry Branstad, was appointed to be the ambassador to the country of China. Life in Beijing is a little different than life in Des Moines. But his job is to live in a country that is not his home. He is just there until his time as an ambassador is up. But he lives there so that he can accomplish stuff for the one that he serves, our president. If the president doesn't have anything left for him to do, he will call him back home. But the ambassador serves in a land that is not his own at the pleasure of the president of the United States. You, my friend, are an ambassador for Jesus Christ, for the one true King. You serve him in a land that's not your true home. You are here in a land not your own to do his bidding. You represent him to the people of the land that you are in. That is why you are here. And when he has decided that you have served in that capacity long enough, the one true King will call you back home. So you better be doing what he has put you here to do while you still have one more day. Listen to me, loved ones. The quality of your life really depends on the quality of your investments. Because someday we're going to stand before God and we're going to have to give an account of how we used the days that he gave to us. And what are we going to show to him? Well, in my 70 years, God, I built a big house. I had a nice job. I had a good retirement. Do you realize all of that stuff is going to be incinerated when Christ comes back? So if my life is really going to matter, I'm going to have to invest in something that isn't here. It's up there. It's eternal. Every day you live is a gift of grace from God to be used to invest in other people. Patrick Morley told about how his wife humbled him one night. He was starting a business, and for a long time it was really rough, but it finally started to get off the ground, and they started making some good money, and he started getting invited to civic clubs and organizations and different programs. Come be at this, come be at that. And one night he said to his wife, honey, we have arrived. And she said, yeah, but not at the right place. And they sat down that very night and they decided that they were going to reorganize their priorities. And they decided to do that around one particular question. And they said, but from now on, before we say yes to anything, before we do anything, here's the question we need to ask ourselves. Who's going to cry at our funeral? Let me tell you something. You can build a very big empire, and lots of folks can be impressed by that. And you can have a big old funeral, and they're going to come, and they're going to talk about all the big things that you did and all the big stuff you built and how successful you were, how smart you were, but they're not going to be crying. Who's going to cry at your funeral? Who's going to cry because a major source of joy in their life has been removed? That's what Paul said. He said in verse 25 of Philippians 1, I am convinced that I will remain alive so I can continue to help all of you grow and experience the joy of your faith. Can I ask you something? Who are you a joy to? That is why you are here. That is why you still have one more day to live. Who are you being a joy to? Because the best use of your life is to invest it in something that's actually going to last beyond this world. And only Christ can give that kind of meaning. But that is just half of the story. Because not only does Christ provide meaning and purpose and joy for life, but Christ provides the hope and courage for dying. As I reflected this week on what Paul said about dying, I came under conviction that some of the things that we say around the time of death need to be rethought. For example, have you ever heard someone say when someone is sick, they might say, well, it doesn't look like they have long to live. Can I tell you something this morning? Nobody in this room has long to live. Everybody is terminal. Now, the Puritans understood that. If you go to New England and you see some of those old churches, you're going to find something very interesting. In a lot of those old New England churches, right there on the ground around the church building, they have a cemetery. And have you ever wondered why they did that? Why they buried the bodies of the people right next to the church building? And then in the back of the building, in most Puritan churches, you'll notice that they have clear glass, not stained glass. You know why? So that when the preacher stood up in the pulpit and could see the back of the room and look out the window and see the graves, he knew that everybody that he was preaching to was going to be one day put in those graves right out there. So as he stood there, he better say something important. You know what I am? I am a dying man preaching to a room of dying people about the only person I know that can give us life. We are all right on the edge of eternity. None of us has long to live. Another phrase that we ought to rethink, when a dear saint gets sick and passes away, somebody inevitably says, they're probably better off. Probably? Why do we think it's a shame when a Christian dies? Paul says there is no probably. When a Christian dies, they are far better off. Paul says in verse 23 of chapter 1, I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far. That word depart, it's a very interesting word, by the way. It was the word that the Greeks would use when they would tie up a ship on the dock to a pole, and then they would untie that rope so the ship could kind of leave the dock and go where it needed to go. It's a word also used in ancient times in Paul's day to describe when you would sleep in a tent. A tent is not your home. A tent is just a place that you sleep in because you're actually going somewhere else, and you would fold up that tent and you would pack it away so that you could go where you're supposed to go. That is exactly what Paul says. He says, this isn't my home. This isn't where I belong. I'm ready for God to just pack up this old tent. I'm ready to go home. Malcolm Muggeridge, the well-known British journalist, surprised everybody when he became a Christian as an adult. He was often on TV and asked about why he became a Christian, and he would talk about being a stranger in the world. So one time he's in an interview and somebody said, would you expound on that, what you mean by being a stranger in the world? And listen to what he said. I'd be very glad to do so because I've thought about it often. In the war, when I was in North Africa, I heard a lieutenant colonel first use the phrase displaced person. That phrase was poignant to me. But it is also a very good definition of a person who has come to see that life is not about carnal things or success, but it is about eternity rather than time, I don't really belong here. I'm simply staying here for now. I am a displaced person. You're just a tent, folks. This old body that we have, it's getting older and it's breaking down. It was never meant to last a long time. It's not meant to be permanent. Paul said in 2 Corinthians 5, "Now we know that if the earthly tent we live in is destroyed, we have a building from God, an eternal house in heaven, not built by human hands. Meanwhile, we groan, longing to be clothed with our heavenly dwelling." And you don't understand what I just read if you're not a Christian. If you are not a Christian, you do not understand what I am saying this morning when I say, I'm so eager to live and I'm so eager to die. There's a part of me deep down that's really ready to just break camp and go home. You know why Paul wanted to break camp? Maybe part of it was just the release of kingdom pressure, the burden that he carried for all of these churches that he loved. But maybe part of it was just wanting to get rid of that old sin nature and get that new body that was going to be as pure as Jesus. But do you know what the main reason that Paul wanted to go home? The company of Christ. Paul says, I know when I go, I'm going to have Christ like I've never had him before. I'm going to have union with Christ. I'm going to have intimacy with Christ. Paul didn't want to go because he wanted less pain, less sorrow. He wanted to go because he wanted more Christ. Let me just ask you this. Do you ever get homesick for heaven? You ever just ache to break camp? You know why we don't sometimes? I don't want my children to move far away from me. That's not happened. It could. But I can tell you this, wherever they are, even if it's a place I've never been to, I want to be where they are. Whether I've been there or not, I want to go where they are. Do you ever get homesick for heaven? Because loved ones, if you don't, can I just be really blunt? If you don't, you need to improve your relationship with Jesus. You need to get to a point where you are so obsessed with Christ that the thought of more of him makes your heart leap. Strange. There are people all over the world living like that. Let me tell you about one in particular, a man that you've never heard of, named Mebi Dabash. Mebi lived in Iran. In 1984, he was charged with apostasy, which in Iran means that he converted from Islam to Christianity. He was thrown in jail. And he lived in jail for 10 years, just like Paul, waiting for a trial. So he was finally asked to write down a defense for the crimes that he had been charged with. And I put it in your bulletin so you can see what he actually said to the Iranian government. He wrote, "Jesus Christ is our Savior. And he is the Son of God. To know him means to know eternal life. I, a useless sinner, have believed in his beloved person and all his words and miracles that are recorded in the Gospels. I have committed my life into his hands." Just like Paul, he says, "Life for me is an opportunity to serve him, and death is an opportunity to be with Christ." Therefore, I'm not only satisfied to be in prison for the honor of his holy name, but I'm ready to give my life for the sake of Jesus, my Lord. And on December 12, 1993, Mebi Debash was convicted and sentenced to execution. Well, Western governments, including the United States, by the way, made their appeals, and 1 month later, January 1994, he was released. And then 7 months later, August 1994, he was found murdered in a park in Tehran. Ironically, three other Christians that were released by the government of Iran in Tehran were suspiciously found killed shortly after they were released. People all over the world, still today, are deciding Jesus is a matter of life and death. And that's what I want you to do. So let me share quickly three things that you need to make a part of your heart, not just in your head, part of your heart. First, we need to internalize our certainty of salvation. Paul was absolutely certain what would happen if he died. No question about it. He knew where he was going. One of the men who walked on the moon, he was asked one time, "And when you're on the moon, and you're standing there looking at the beautiful planet Earth, what's going through your mind?" He said, "You know, I remember thinking that our spacecraft was built by the lowest bidder." I'll tell you something. If I'm going to go on a long trip, I want to make sure that I know I can get there when I start. Paul knew that someday there was going to be a group of Christians, and they were going to take that old tent of his and put it down into the ground. And even as they did, on the other side, he was going to hear the words, "Hello, old friend." And when you believe that, you'll turn a prison into a house of praise. We need to take the doctrine of assurance and get it from just being in here in our minds to our hearts as well. We need to internalize our certainty of salvation. Second, we need to internalize the necessity of service. Life is not measured by duration, but by donation. What are we doing with this brief amount of time that we have with these bodies of ours that really matters? There's a neat story about Louis Pasteur, the famous immunologist. For years, he tried to find a way to help people that contracted rabies. Thousands of people used to die of rabies every single year in his day. He was very close to what he thought might be the cure when little 9-year-old Joseph Meister was bitten by a rabid dog. And his mother pleaded with Louis Pasteur to try this new antidote on her child. So for 10 days, little Joseph Meister got shots and he lived. And years later, before Louis Pasteur was about to die, after years of receiving awards and all kinds of honors, someone asked, "What would you want on your tombstone, Louis?" He said three words: "Joseph Meister lived." What are you doing with your life that matters forever? Use the gift of life that God has given to you today to give the gift of Jesus to somebody else. Be a joy to them. Final note is that we need to internalize the security of sacrifice. Paul says, "I'm willing to give up every single thing that I have for Jesus. I will love Jesus with all of my heart, all of my soul, all of my mind, all of my strength, and when I die, I'm going to have gained. Now listen, I didn't major in business when I was in college, and I don't add up numbers very well all the time, but I think that I know enough to know this. The only way for something to actually be a gain is if that the reward that you get is going to be bigger than the investment you put in. And if you invest in something and you only get a small amount back, that is not a gain, that is a loss. And what Paul is saying is that there is nothing that you can give to Jesus that will not become a gain. In short, there is no safer investment you can make with your life than to spend it on Jesus. That's why one of my favorite stories is about young William Borden. He graduated from high school in Chicago when he was only 18 years old. He was the heir to the famous Borden Dairy Estate. So when he graduated from high school, his parents gave to him a gift of traveling around the world. So for the first time in his life on that trip, he really became exposed to the poverty and the great need on our planet. And he came back and he shocked all of his family and all of his friends. And he said, "I think that God has called me to be a missionary." Well, nobody thought he was very serious. But before he went off to Yale to study, he wrote two words in his Bible: "No reserves." So he went and got a degree, 4 years studying at Yale. And he immediately got all kinds of high-paying job offers from companies all across America. But he said, "No, I want to go to Princeton now, and I want to go to the seminary to study to become a missionary." And he wrote, before he started, in his Bible, two more words: "No retreat." He graduated from seminary, and he decided God was calling him to China to preach to the Muslims. He wanted to tell them about Jesus, so he went to Egypt to train and prepare. And he was there only 1 month when he contracted cerebral meningitis and he died. A lot of people looked at his young life with all the potential and they thought, what a waste. But you need to know, before he died, young William Borden wrote in his Bible two more words: "No regrets." Paul says, "To live is Christ, to die is gain." You will never, ever regret being obsessed with Christ. Paul writes in Romans chapter 8, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." I want you to become obsessed with Christ, because it really is a matter of life and death. We're going to sing a song of invitation. And if you have a decision this morning, I would ask that you make that public. Would you stand up as we get ready to sing together this morning?